Okay, shall we make a start? Welcome everyone. My name is Maggie from EY and I'm the chair for this session. So the topic of the presentation is the future of liability insurance. It talks about the current liability insurance industry in Australia, the changes in the past and ahead, and how the role of actuaries can progress in this space. We have two presenters for this session. Our first presenter today is Alice. So Alice has worked in the general insurance industry since 2006 at Finity and has been a qualified actuary for more than 9 years. Alice is a key member of the commercial insurance and natural peril practice at Finity. She has worked on numerous pricing assignments for a range of organisations in the insurance industry, as well as being involved in managing and developing new products for the firm. She undertakes various research and development initiatives for commercial insurance classes, and liability is an area that Alice has particular interest in. And second presenter is Kim Nowacik. Kim has worked as a consultant with Finity for the past 12 years, primarily supporting government organisations, general insurers and self-insurers. Kim is a keen researcher interested in the areas of medical malpractice, accident compensation and liability. Kim has worked on more than 70 projects with Finity for over 50 clients ranging from analytical to project manager roles. So now please join me now to welcome Kim and Alice. Over to you.
All right, let's figure this out. I just push down, I assume?
Yeah, I'll have a go. All right, thank you. Thank you, Maggie. Thank you, everybody. So cast your mind back. More than 10 years ago, liability insurance was the talk of the town. The liability crisis was fresh in people's minds, and with that, the uncertainty around the effectiveness of the tort reforms. I even remember back, I think I worked on a paper with Estelle, helping her with assessing the tort reform. So this has all come around full circle. Now we're more than 10 years on, and we felt that it was time to basically take stock of where liability insurance is in Australia, and more importantly, consider the changes that might be for the future landscape. So I'll just take you through what we did. We had generally researched and then interviewed a number of people from actuarial to underwriter to people, product people, and probably around over a dozen people we interviewed with, and we give a big thank you to those people that we had interviewed. Also, thanks to Estelle and Patrick, who also helped with the presentation. So let's get underway. We're going to take you through today the current landscape, where we're headed, actuarial analytics in the future. So this kind of goes with the theme of connecting today and tomorrow. First, we're going to talk about the current landscape, where has it brought us and where are we today, then the changes that we see for the future and how it might impact the liability industry, and then finish off that actuarial analytics to help ensure the financial health of the industry by arming insurers with the right information and analytics to make good business decisions. So I'll take you through what we're going to cover in the current landscape. We've got the market, customers, the product, distribution, underwriting and pricing, and then I'll hand it over to Alice, who will take you through the claims into the end. So for the market, two real aspects of this. In the early to mid-2000s, you could make profit from almost any segment of the liability business. Over the last 10 years, liability is still profitable, but rate reductions have really whittled down the profits. And you can see that by little less dollars on the tree. Now, in 2015, gross written premium is about $1.8 billion from the APRA authorized insurers, and this was really unchanged from the levels that we saw in 2003. So over that time, rates reduced by around 60% while offsetting exposure and growth and inflation growth. So I guess the story for this is less profits to go around. Insurers need to be selective and target the right segments, and there are so many of them. This shows us the change in customers, so the changing mix. And we decided to look at employed persons and number of businesses, But this basically shows that over the last 10 years, it's a different landscape. We've seen the shift away from manufacturing, and the service industry has been growing. And even within the services industry, you'll find little pockets of where growth has changed and health is growing. Other elements have been decreasing. As different industries have different risk drivers, this means that the risk profile for the liability has been changing. And since actuaries, we look at everything in aggregate or tend to look at things in aggregate, it's important to understand these changes and the impacts on your portfolio. So we're going to look at two particular instances of this. On the left-hand side, we have the proportion of source of imports. So on the previous slide, we had the manufacturing that has been decreasing. And this has not been just Australia. It has been happening for most of the developing world. And as that has been declining, our proportion of imports have been increasing from the developing world. We expect that this will have implications for product liability because of the differences in maybe the standards or the quality. And I think we have some examples later of how that's played out. The second one is the use of hired labor. And this has to do with the employment practices. So during that time, employment practices have also changed, resulting in more labor hire workers and contractors. This is important for liability insurance because of worker-to-worker claims. Now, we tend to call these public liability work injury claims, or PLUI for short. This basically has been a transfer out of the workers' compensation space and into the public liability space as the hired labor have accidents. It comes under the liability policies. And I think we'll talk a little bit about that later as well. So another disruptor, as we all know, and this is more into the future. I don't think this needs any introduction. I think we've talked a lot about this. We've got your autonomous cars, your drones, your Internet of Things. Nick Sorden has spoke at length a little bit about this, but we really see two impacts from this in the liability industry, and this is changes in technology will change the risk profile for liability in the next 5 to 10 years, and it's going to shift risk from one class to another within that liability umbrella. So speaking of umbrellas, we have the product. Now, from our interviews, the general view has been that liability coverage is broader, but these tend to be very incremental changes, nuanced changes. I think the general standard coverage has remained largely unchanged. A few exceptions where it's even narrowed some is in the work injury space. You've got deductibles, sublimits, even some exclusions on a case-by-case basis. Molestation exclusions, I think, have been around for a very long time, and we've seen them being held strong, not eroding. Another exclusion that you'll probably all be aware of is cyber. This is an interesting one. Generally, it's been excluded. However, we've seen instances of advertising injury being included. And this is when a cyber attack can come out of any advertising with libel, slander, invasion of privacy, and all that sort. So this is, we haven't seen anything here. The U.S., of course, have had the claims. But keep an eye out, mandatory reporting, we'll see. Now I'm going to talk to you about distribution. So this is an interesting one. I love it. Lots of orange. Lots of brokers. It's generally an intermediary product. It hasn't changed much in the last 10 years. Therefore, we see this as the area for disruption, especially at the very small end. Over 95% of businesses have less than $2 million turnover. A lot going on there. And we had looked into websites like BizCover. You see they're 1% now of the Internet, or not them alone, but Internet in general is 1% of the way that it's distributed. In the UK, we looked at RoboAdvice, which is pretty exciting. Check it out. Brawly and Spixy existing. But these are more in the personal insurance space, or what they call the personal insurance space. So then it's all about when will it leap to the liability, and particularly the commercial area, for the lower end of the market. Now I'm going to talk about underwriting and pricing, this little clever little graphic. We see it as two modes in liability insurance. You've got your automatic, which is package, SME. It's very, automated, and that we find that there's an opportunity there for pricing well to improve the profits by reducing the costs and having more accurate pricing going to market, speed, all that sort of thing. And then the other side is the standalone business or the mid-sized to corporate, which is very still much an individual risk, underwriting driven, and will likely remain so in the future. It's very complicated. So we definitely see that the opportunities are with the package business. But I think Alice will talk a bit more about that. And I think she's going to talk about claims. So I'll ask her to come up. Thank you for listening.
Okay. Thanks, Kim. Oh, sorry. All right. I'm going to touch it. Claims environment. So I'm just going to talk about the claims environment and superimposed inflation before we move on to looking at the future. What can I say about claims? Well, firstly, the tort temperature, as I hope most of you know, is quite benign at the moment. There's not a lot of superimposed inflation that we see, which is great for insurers, and that's what's kept this business so profitable. What's interesting, though, is that what's driving the good claims experience is the fact that frequency, and actually not just frequency, but numbers of claims are falling, and we can see that in our NCPD data. And to be honest, we're not quite sure why. And I think we're not quite sure why because we don't have enough information on underlying exposure. We don't have enough of a breakdown on what types of claims these are reducing. And, you know, that's something that we hope will become more and more available in the future. What I actually really wanted to focus on in this slide is that diagram in the middle, so the claim type and cause of claim. So the breakup for liability claims, we can break that up into three types. Property damage, work injury liability, which is PLUI that Kim mentioned, and other bodily injury. And we think that it's roughly about a third, a third, a third to each. What's even more interesting, I think, I hope most actuaries doing either valuations or pricing these days are breaking out claims into these three buckets as opposed to just traditional bodily injury and property damage because they have quite different, which I'm sure you all know, they have quite different characteristics. But I think what's even more interesting is that within each of these buckets, there's actually more detailed breakdowns of these claims. So I've shown some examples here based on NCPD cause codes. So essentially you can break down these claims into the types of events that drive or that cause these claims. So for bodily injury or other bodily injury, you have obviously slips and falls, as opposed to, say, product liability or impact-type claims. And as far as I know, in pricing at the moment, these cause codes aren't looked at very much. And we think that actuaries need to start looking at these because they help explain a bit more of the experience and they help us link it better with what's happening on the exposure side. In claims, there are a couple of clouds on the horizon. Oh, actually, I can look at this. So sexual abuse is one that people have obviously talked a lot about. We're yet to see the full extent of these claims. Mental harm is an area where we see some creep. There's definitely increase in standards, and we see that in other classes, in workers' comp, in CTP, for example. And we think it's a matter of time before it filters through to liability. It's clearly harder to assess what the impact of that is in liability because you've got sort of a different mix of claims. And the last thing that I think is on the horizon is, well, it's already arrived, but I think that it's potentially a bigger issue in the future, is class actions. So far we've seen, you know, everyone's aware of the bushfire claims. It's about $800 million at the moment as it stands. There's the hip implant case, which is, I think, 2016 settlement for $250 million, which is quite a big amount. And there's some sort of smaller product or food product liability claims so far, class action so far. I think with what Kim said about the changes in profile of imports, changes in sort of essentially changes in our customers and their risk profile, we see this as an area where the increasing litigious class action environment could actually make these claims more prevalent in liability. Probably, most likely, they're probably going to be localized, but I think it's important to understand which areas that they may arise in and how much exposure you have in them. So that's the claims environment. Then we wanted to spend some time thinking about superimposed inflation, because that's something that actuaries are asked to assess, shall we say. So We looked at superimposed inflation for two major Australian insurers based on what they disclose in their annual reports, and we've summarised what sort of happened since 2001, just after tort reform, to now. So back in, so although it's only two insurers, it's pretty representative of the market, I think. So up until about 2008, the industry was using between 4 and 5% for superimposed inflation. Now it's been reduced to around 2.5%, which I think reflects the current benign claims environment. In fact, it's a little bit higher than the current benign claims environment. I guess when we thought about when we talked to people about superimposed inflation, there are a couple of concerns that were raised around the current approach. I think one thing that we've observed is that the methods by which we assess superimposed inflation at the moment isn't very sophisticated. The assumption is something that is owned by actuaries. And there's a lack of a link between reserving and pricing because the business sort of sees that as something that doesn't enable them to write business in the current competitive environment if they were to adopt these superimposed inflation assumptions. And I think, you know, part of the, I guess my personal view when I look at that is it's probably the way that we assess superimposed inflation, it's still very much driven by looking backwards. So it took us a long time to kind of get to the point where we could reduce the superimposed inflation assumptions. There need to be many years of, you know, good claims environment. And where we are at now, I guess I would sort of wonder how many actuaries out there would feel confident about their superimposed inflation assumption being a forward-looking view. And, you know, let's say how many people have actually assessed the potential impact of higher mental health claims when setting the superimposed inflation assumption. I think our view is that this is one of those areas where we might need to rethink how we actually approach it. So I personally think we should be moving towards more forward-looking view. And I think if we were to move towards a more forward-looking view, then it raises the question of whether or not actuaries ourselves can take full responsibility for that assumption or whether it needs to reflect the business view as well. Because, well, I think it's pretty obvious. The business needs to own this assumption so that they can make the right decisions around what they want to write. I think to enable us to do that, I guess the role for us then in that space is to work out a framework to come up with a view on superimposed inflation and to help channel the business decisions within that framework. So there's kind of a consistent or an actual business decision that's made, that's the view that we're taking. It does raise some questions around what we do in reserving versus pricing. And I think that it's sort of up to each individual company to decide how they approach that. My personal approach would be that allowing for a longer-term growth or allowing for unexpected deterioration in the claims environment should be something that's dealt with more either in the RDS or as part of your risk margins assessment, and not so much as part of your assessment of where the sort of near-term superimposed inflation is headed. So that's pretty much what we, you know, had on the current landscape for liability. So to kind of summarise, I think Kim's has shown you how essentially the market is, the premium pool is fairly stagnant. Premium rates have been reducing and are not looking like they're going to go up. During that time, there's been a lot of changes in our customer mix. There's been changes in the claims profile. And there are developments in technology that are likely to change that even further. Claims has been good. So what does it look like in the future? I think a lot of people have already talked about a lot of the future changes in the landscape, so I'm not going to talk about this too much. What I wanted to focus on was the impact of technology on liability. So we've done a bit of thinking around this. And so we've kind of thought about how does it impact product, distribution, claims profile, and pricing and analytics. So I think I'll talk about product and distribution together. As Kim said, over 95% of businesses have turnover less than 2 million. The vast majority of these are currently intermediated, as you would have seen from the distribution chart. And for a long time now, we haven't seen a lot of changes in this product. We think that as behaviours change, as people's behaviours change, so do businesses. And more people are going to want things on demand. The way they do business is different. And technology enables that. And I think that what that means is, as Kim said earlier, especially in the smaller end of the market, that packages space is really ripe for disruption, either in terms of how the product is distributed, whether or not you need that human intervention, and the product itself. Will it become more commoditized? At the moment, it's a fairly complex product. And, you know, is there a role for robo-advice? You know, we had that diagram up there. We certainly think that it's an area where that could play a much bigger role than what sort of brokers currently do. So not to say that there isn't a future for broking firms, but that potentially there could be more automation of what happens, what a broker currently does. And it also means that if we've headed down that sort of more direct and more automated route, I think it means that there would be the cost of doing business will be much lower after the initial investment, that is. On the claims profile side, in my mind, I think there is a very high likelihood that we're going to see changes in the claims profile. So clearly there's potential for new sources of claims. Cyber liability claims, Kim mentioned. You know, whilst it's not likely, we've already seen the first case of that in the US under the advertising injury provision for a liability policy. Product liability, will they become more prominent as we shift out, as our imports are increasingly coming from countries where the standards of production and safety aren't the same as what we've been used to? And I think it's going to be critical for actuaries and insurers to stay on top of how their claim profile may change in reserving and pricing work. Pricing and analytics. So I guess we think that there's a much bigger role for actuaries to play in this space, and that's why we wanted to focus on it. So we wanted to put forward our thoughts on what actuaries need to be doing in the liability space to add value to the business. So that's our two diagrams. The first diagram, I guess, the key word I'll use to describe that is integrated. I think traditionally actuaries have been more involved in measuring things after the fact, and we're very much a back office function. I think in the past in some companies, there hasn't even been a strong link between reserving and pricing. I think the position we want to get to is to be more involved in the business, to be more involved and communicate more with the product side, underwriting, portfolio management, and claims, so that we know what's going on with the business, we know what's going on with the product, and we can more effectively advise the business and advise management. The natural starting point to that, I think, is understanding the product itself. What's the purpose of the product, what's covered and what's not, and how do claims arise? And clearly tapping into underwriter knowledge and working with portfolio is also really important because they know a lot more about the market, about the customers, and about the risk itself. And we need to know what they've been doing with a portfolio. What else is excellent? So on the claim side, the actions of the claims department drive the claims data, which I'm sure everyone's aware of. How much are we able to influence what happens there? How much are we able to sort of make sure that we're getting the right information and that, you know, we're comfortable with the quality of the information and that they understand what the purpose of what they're capturing is? And that kind of brings me to what I've listed on the right-hand side. So essentially, in terms of what actually needs to be done by actuaries to achieve that greater integration and to be able to be more effective, the first thing I'd say is data strategy. So my personal experience in the past is that actuaries work with whatever data they're given. I hope we can all agree that the world is moving on from that and a lot more could be done to get the right information. And I think actuaries have a role to play in defining what data needs to be collected and what data needs to be made available to them to use. For starters, I think as a minimum, that means companies need to be able to link claims to exposure and rating information, and actuaries need to be able to use this in both pricing, reserving, risk assessment, etc. And it always surprises me how many companies don't actually have that sort of set up. But I do think most companies are moving towards that. Another thing that surprises me is how little used quote data is in commercial, especially sort of detailed quote data. And I think that's more a reflection of the fact that there's just not ever really been much focus on it. It hasn't been used. I think the data could be better. I think the data is usable. It's just that no one's sort of taken the time, or not many people have taken the time to really clean that up, make sure that it's captured, and work out how you factor that into assessing, say, competitive position. And I think that's an area where actuaries could be doing a lot more in. So on data strategy, I think the key message that we're trying to say is that actuaries need to get on the front foot with it. We need to be more involved in the capture of underwriting data, in the discipline or more disciplined capture of claims data. We need to be investigating what could be available, which isn't currently, consider what improvements need to be made to data, and make these recommendations, and to be involved, you know, as part of the business in discussing that. Clearly, there's a role for external data as well. I think a lot of the times in the past, when companies sort of have resisted investing anything in improving their information, the argument has been, well, we just don't have enough data anyway. There's really not much value that actuaries can add. And that's probably true to some extent. My personal view would be that having that information is much better than not having that information, even if it just gives you some idea of how your exposure profile is changing, especially when the world is changing around you and there's that claims profiles are going to change. But also, with the fact that we do have external databases like NCPD, with the fact that we do have access to information like legal databases, these are bits of external information that can supplement what you're seeing and at least allow you to draw some insights or, you know, confirm or deny what you're seeing in your own experience. Now, more granular pricing. So what I mean by granular is, I'm referring to granular in terms of the components of risk primarily, and not so much, I think in the future we might move towards more granular in terms of customer-specific pricing. So components of risk, I mean sort of pricing explicitly by peril and also factoring in variations in terms of conditions. And that sort of means making sure that we align the technical algorithm with the product design that needs to be the starting point of any pricing review, because it will enable companies to make much more informed decisions about product and underwriting and impose discipline in both these areas. Clearly, as things change, it's going to be much more important. You know, for example, as product liability becomes more important for autonomous car manufacturers, distributors, or programmers, with more granular component-based pricing, you're able to more explicitly adjust for these and track your level of exposure, track your performance of claims, and therefore work out what actions need to be taken. I guess related to that, to be able to parameterize a model like that and to be able to track the claims experience like that, you do need very good claims data. And that means you need a way of being able to attribute claims to the right covers and also breaking that into the right perils. And, you know, I think that's an area that really requires a bit more attention than what it's currently gotten. Identifying and modeling key drivers. So we need to understand the drivers of claims experience to be able to provide useful predictions for liability in particular. These drivers can't just be identified or by looking at claims data. Data is always too backwards looking. So we need to be understanding the risk. We need to tap into underwriter knowledge to be able to do that effectively. As we know, drivers of claims experience for liability are very complex. And actually, even on the sales side, I would say it's not that straightforward, because 60% of the business is sold as a packaged product. And it's also an intermediated business, and that kind of affects sort of behaviours. But I think what could really improve our understanding of claims drivers is the claims cause codes, causes of claims that I mentioned before. So at the moment, we split up by bodily injury, property damage, and hopefully by work injury liability as well. But, you know, within bodily injury, you could break that down much further. You could think about what industries are more prone to the slip and fall claims and what's happening with those slip and fall claims. You know, what's the sort of tort environment for those slip and fall claims? Knowing that means that you know, as your portfolio mix changes, how that will impact your frequency and average claim size. For work injury liability claims, for example, when we did our investigation into it, we found that there were actually three main types of exposures that cause these claims. And, you know, most people in the industry talk about labour hire, but there's multiple party claims and there's also occupier type claims, which have always been around. But the question is, to what extent have they changed over time? And how much, you know, how has your exposure to these claims changed over time? I guess another example I could give on understanding or why understanding drivers is important is work injury liability. So in South Australia, because of the workers' comp or the changes in workers' comp legislation, they've essentially tightened the benefits they can give for workers' comp. That means that liability is going to look much more attractive to someone who's injured at work where a potential third party is at fault. Whereas that would not have been as attractive before because they don't have the, you know, they always have workers' comp as a first port of call and the injury is, or, and the benefits are quite generous. So, yeah, that's just one example. The last thing I was going to say is the end-to-end pricing control framework. Now, it's not, I guess the key points I want to make is it's not just about building GLMs of technical cost or doing one or two-way summaries of relativities. It's about sort of including portfolio monitoring, which helps helping to raise potential red flags, tracking the business and how it's going compared to objectives, and being kind of in much more dialogue with the business about that. And I think an important concept here, which doesn't seem to be as prevalent in commercial, is being able to separate technical pricing from system-generated price, from the achieved price. And I think we need to be moving companies down that route, because that means that you can allow monitoring of discretionary discounts, you can track, essentially have more control over underwriting actions over the portfolio. So I wanted to focus a bit on pricing in the future in the liability space. So we kind of, as Kim mentioned before, okay. Yeah, thanks. So we just want to talk about SME pricing versus corporate. At the moment, we think pricing in commercial lines is not particularly sophisticated, definitely not compared to, say, personal lines, and we think that in the SME package space, that could get to a stage that's a lot more similar to commercial to personal lines. It's a lot less complex, it's high volume and small dollar, a small premium business. What does looking like commercial lines mean? Well, first of all, leveraging off the existing pricing engines for pricing. So, for example, especially if you have both commercial and personal lines business, then you've already got this structure to be able to produce component-based pricing. Component and peril-based pricing, automated pricing with referral rules built into the pricing engine, which basically would involve codifying underwriter knowledge as much as possible and helping direct underwriter time and effort towards the areas that really require attention. And I think, you know, with some of the changes we think could happen in the SME space, in fact, we think it's very likely to happen in the SME space, this better pricing is going to become more important because the segment is going to become more competitive. On the corporate side, we think the individual risk assessment and underwriting will always be important because it's a small number of policies and it's very, very complex risk and it needs to be tailored to the risk profile. But we do see it moving towards more control and discipline around that underwriting so that you can sort of at least have a framework to sort of a benchmark to refer against, if you will. And currently we think that there's a lot of inconsistencies in the data, models and judgments that are being used. Okay, so that's pricing in the future. Now, most of the topics on reserving and capital the issues in reserving capital we want to raise have already been raised. I guess the key thing that I would say here is, first of all, that the link to product portfolio and pricing has been difficult in the past because in liability, you know, the way we look at liability as a class is different from the way that it's sold as a, you know, say as a package product. For the standalone part, it's definitely a lot more closely aligned. And we think that if you're able to break down the pricing into more component-based prices within the package's product, then that means that you can actually achieve greater alignment between reserving and product. Underlying exposures we talked about, and I think Nick Sorden has mentioned yesterday, understanding that is obviously very key to reserving capital, and superimposed inflation I've talked about as well. Accumulations, you know, we think that could become more important, especially as product liability kind of grows in the future. And dealing with legacy has always been an issue, and I think, you know, there needs to be a stronger or better framework around how we assess that. There is obviously a lot of talk around nanotechnology, where that's going to head, how many people really understand their potential exposures to this is the question. So that pretty much brings me to the end of my presentation. One thing we wanted to say was that we interviewed a number of people as part of our background research for this presentation, and we just wanted to say a big thank you. Some of them are in this room. We just want to say a big thank you to those people for their time and their valuable contributions. Hopefully we've shown you how there have been lots of changes in the current environment or situation for liability. I think current techniques probably don't adequately address the business needs, and the world has moved beyond sort of when those methods were developed. And I think with these changes that we are likely to see in the future, actuaries have to be providing better analytics and better advice in the liability space, and also making ourselves more integrated with the business itself. Thanks.
Thanks, Kim and Alice. I think we may only have time for one question, so if someone has a burning question they'd like to ask, please go to the mic and call out your name, please.
Robert Cameron from Chubb. Just on the question of your interviews, did you actually interview any brokers, given that they dominate the distribution of the market, on their views? I've got another question after that.
That's right. Can you hear me? Oh, yeah. So, unfortunately, no. We tried, but we couldn't get any time with any of the brokers.
Right, okay.
But, yeah,
and
agree.
You talked about, obviously, in the graph, and they mentioned the 2 million limit of 95% of the business and the potential for that to be a disruption to the broker market. I think that's something that's been thought about and talked about and dabbled in for 10 years. Do you have any view on why that hasn't got any traction and why you think it is going to get potentially traction in the future?
Well, I think, so if we go back to the distribution slide, so it has been talked about a lot. There hasn't been a lot done, and look, I don't know until now, I would say. I think in the last however many years, we've seen internet become 1% of the total premium volumes, which I think we estimated translates to over 100 million of premiums. I think that it could be a case of people just not having had the devoted the time and effort to that space yet. And, you know, I think to sort of say, well, it hasn't moved anywhere in 10 years and therefore it won't change in the future, potentially opens players in that space up to something looking like what happened to the taxi industry. You know, I think if it hasn't changed so far, it doesn't necessarily mean that it won't change going forward. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Why it hasn't so far?
Yeah.
I think it's a good question. Well, we don't really see any. We're not aware of anything that would sort of stop that, especially when sort of you've got so many sole traders, say. You know, do they really need to be going through brokers to buy business? How complex is their risk? How different is it? Could assessment of that not be, dealt with better by artificial intelligence? We are seeing companies like Spixi and, was it Broly, I think it was, where they are starting to do that in the personal line space, which, you know, you could also say, well, that hasn't happened so far in personal lines. So, predicting the future is always difficult, but I think it's a risk that people need to be taking more seriously.
Cool. Thanks, everyone. I now...
sorry, just expand on that. I think a part of it is about education, and there hasn't been a focus on educating particularly SMEs around liability exposures and stuff like that, and so it's remained the domain of the brokers. Mm-hmm. But I think once insurers are now starting to focus more on customers, I think that element might actually drive more direct.
Yeah, maybe it's the fear of disruption in the past, the fear of insurers disrupting the brokers, the broker relationship. Yeah.
Cool. I now conclude the session. If you have any more questions, please ask Alice after the presentation. And I'd like to remind you to please complete the survey. And finally, please join me in thanking the presenters with a big round of applause.